differences? And
well, I'm just a little shocked. I mean, it's hard for me to verbally say anything other than I'm just devastated. And you know, Eddie was really cool, and I've been talking to him. We've been texting, and I knew he was sick, but I didn't want to ask him how sick he was, or you know. But he was at the hospital in L.A. for a while, and I knew was up, but I didn't expect that today at all.
Yeah.
And so I'm floored.
What do you think the legacy of him is in rock and roll?
Eddie changed guitar playing. I mean, I picked up the guitar in, I guess it was 1979, 1980. The first Van Halen record came out, and Steven Adler, which Guns N' Roses' original drummer when we were kids, used to just hang out and ditch school and go to the pizza place and whatnot. And we used to listen to that first Van Halen record, and it was just insane. It was like, what the anyway, and he changed guitar playing, but he was such an amazing musician, amazing guitar player, amazing innovator, and just a hell of a guy. And you know, we really lost a major contributor to rock and roll today.
Oh! stood and looked down. You know I lost a lot of friends there, baby. I got no time to mess around. So if you want it, got to bleed, boy, baby.
Ain't talking about love, Van Halen right there. And also, you really got me, the Kinks cover. And of course, the audio there, the clip was actually a reporter talking to Slash last week when the announcement was made. Him, you know, reminiscing back in high school, that sort of thing. So, yeah, I mean, there's just so much music that you can put together in a tribute of different points of Van Halen and everything. So, but I kind of chose to just play some of the tracks from the early, from the first album, that sort of thing. And, but that doesn't mean I'm not going to play like a track from later on, the different versions of Van Halen. So weird that I'm talking about that Eddie Van Halen died. It still weirds me out. It's like a week later. Right. And then of course that whole tribute from his son, Wolfgang, was just kind of like, made me think of my dad for a minute there. Sammy Hagar and, Michael Anthony, they're up next. They patch things up with Eddie towards the end and some of the readings that I have done. They went on when they left Van Halen and did Chickenfoot. And Sammy Hagar actually, back in like 2005, 2006, actually did a reunion tour with Van Halen. And it was really funny because I had like a whole bunch of tickets years ago, and I was giving away on the air at C101 back in the day. And I took a whole bunch of some of my other fellow classmates. I had some of the tickets, and I took them all down to see Van Halen. And they were floored seeing how good Eddie Van Halen was. And even like halfway through the show, Eddie goes, "I'm drunk. Are you guys really liking this?" And I started laughing because it was just, even him drunk was still, you know, 90 times better than most guitarists that I've seen doing that style of music. So it was kind of funny. But I'm glad that I caught them when I did. And I really wish I would have seen them back in 2015, 2014, 2013. But I just never had the opportunity when David Lee Roth was back and his son, Wolfie, was on bass. So I pulled a little clip from Michael Anthony and Sammy Hagar paying tribute just after a show when they were the show they were doing with Chickenfoot. So here it is.
We just walked off stage from Catalina concert on the beach, something we've been planning for months.
Birthday bash for Sam. Couldn't do it in Cabo this year because of COVID, so I'm doing it here for everyone.
It was great after not seeing these guys and playing together for
eight months.
But the craziest part of the whole thing was is that here we are, the circle where we play
Montrose, Chickenfoot, early Sammy. We play Van Halen. We play Led Zeppelin, right? And after the unfortunate thing that happened with Eddie Van Halen yesterday, which was, for Mike and I, was just like getting hit by a freaking Mack truck. Ooh, kind of took the wind out of the sails for this sailing.
It makes it, I mean, for being such a occasion that we wanted to promote here, it made it very bittersweet.
I just want to say that I'm kind of devastated. We get to do it again tomorrow. I tell you, a Van Halen song never felt so hard to sing and play in my life.
It was hard.
It was.
It's very surreal right now, and it hasn't sunk in yet.
Well, what I felt playing, especially a song like Right Now that's so timeless, that I felt, wow, thank God for this. You know what I mean? It's like, we'll never play with Eddie again, but thank God for this.
We have the music.
The music, you know, will live forever.
I mean, and if nothing else,
I'll sing it as long as I live.
Love you, Eddie.
Yeah.
You're listening to Steel City Music, and we're spinning some tunes of Van Halen, a bit of a tribute to Edward Van Halen, who passed away October 6th, right here, right now. The Sammy Hagar, or Van Hagar, as what we used to call it back in the day. I'm going to leave you with Cradle Will Rock, and also next half hour, it's the early years of Van Halen doc that was put together, and I ripped the audio from that, and I just think it's kind of makes sense to air this part of this, so enjoy that as well.
Junior's grades.
Arduous practice and playing the backyard party in small club circuit around Pasadena, California, Edward and Alex Van Halen, Michael Anthony, and David Lee Roth earned the right to enjoy the spoils of their success.
We worked real hard at being able to do it. You know, it's not like if we were born with guitars and drums and voices that can sing, and like it was some gift.
And in the process, reinvented the landscape of hard rock music.
And when we heard Van Halen for the first time, it was like hearing Led Zeppelin for the first time or Jimi Hendrix for the first time. You knew it was something amazing.
And they were so fucking good, I had to hold on to my chair. I mean, they were full of full-blown energy and nonstop.
Van Halen is a six-pack of beer, big-breasted woman riding down the highway, running over animals.
Pure raw, unadulterated, you know, great rock and roll music.
The girls wanted them and the guys wanted to be like them.
I was 11, rocking around the ghetto blaster listening to Van Halen.
I think rock and roll existed so that original Van Halen could exist.
four distinctive personalities that would later ignite the mighty Van Halen, first flickered into the world during a time when a hip-swiveling rocker known as Elvis was recording his earliest tracks at Sun Records, and Marilyn Monroe was making her debut on the cover of Playboy. In Amsterdam on May 8, 1953, Jan Van Halen, a Dutch clarinet and saxophone player, and his wife Eugenia welcomed their first son, Alex.
When you put on a Van Halen record, even if you don't know that it's a Van Halen record, as soon as you hear that, I know it's him.
Most drummers have a certain style. As long as I can remember, it was two kick drums. I always liked the sense of rhythm that a double bass player had.
Everything used to be so far out there, you know, four kick drums and in the, you know, the hi-hats were always way up here. So you're talking about a lot of this kind of movement with your hands. And a lot of that comes from show.
If a guy can develop a sound that is really identifiable, I think that's a big achievement. And I think Alex did that.
A little over a year later, on June 20th, 1954, Michael Sobolewski, who later became known as Michael Anthony, was born in Chicago, the second of five children.
I mean, if you seen him on the street, you wouldn't know that he was some fucking kick-ass bass player, you know what I mean? And he was.
Without that high voice of Michael Anthony, where would they have been?
Can't imagine that band without that vocal, without that high-pitched sound. And when you really look at Van Halen, it's the guitar sound, it's that snare sound, Michael holding down the groove, and that vocal.
A few months later, on October 10th, David Lee Roth made a flying leap into a prominent surgeon's home in Bloomington, Indiana.
He folded the map in half, line runs right through Newcastle County, Indiana, where I was born. And my music always came from that.
I think the guy's a genius. He's the world's greatest entertainer that ever lived in my eyes. You know, a lot of people will argue that with me, but one of the best front mans you're ever going to see ever.
David is a party animal. Let's face it, today, wine, women, and song, you read about it in the papers, the same thing. He partied, man. Many days he'd take a chick out of here, come back 10 minutes later looking for another one. Chicks, 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 that's it.
And finally, on January 26, 1955, in Amsterdam, Edward Van Halen was born, the last member to form the mighty Van Halen.
You could always tell an Eddie Van Halen guitar, which to me is what makes a great guitar player. But he could do things technically as well, which is why I put him in, you know, in one of those top 10 guitar players in rock.
He has this part of his brain, which you would call semi-genius. He recognizes things very, very quickly that would take you and I some time to ponder on, or someone have to show us, or we'd have to go to school, or we might have a bit of it, and we figure it out later. He just goes, that, I know that, okay, fine, that must happen there.
He created his own guitar, his own sound, and his own feel and emotion. And that's what drew people to him, his uniqueness, his individuality. And he changed the way music was played in the 80s, the way music was heard in the 80s.
I couldn't believe that someone could make that awesome sound. Never made a mistake when he was noodling, and always hit every note perfect and got better and better.
Early in their lives, Eddie and Alex's father began teaching his sons how to play piano. Mom provided constant encouragement in hopes that someday one of her boys might become a classical pianist.
Mr. Van Halen definitely played a major part in confidence. You know, he was a musician himself. And that house was always music.
The earliest memories I have, really, as far as musically, is that our father was into music, and you couldn't help but be touched by it. I'd watch him practice, I'd watch him play. Basically, Ed and I were surrounded by music.
America gained two of its most valuable musical imports in March of 1962, when Jan and Eugenia Van Halen settled with their two boys in the warm suburbia of Pasadena, California.
When we came on the boat to America, my dad would play in the band that was playing on the boat so that we could pay for our passage. We were flat broke when we came over here. And Ed and I would play piano Yeah, here's my dad playing on stage with the band, making some money so we could pay for our passage. And then it was kind of a novelty to have two kids playing piano.
When they moved here, they didn't speak English yet, so Eddie and Al could only talk to each other for a while, and that made them really bond.
And when Ed and I went to school, the only barrier that we had was our language barrier. We couldn't speak the language. We knew, I think, two words, yes and accident. Accident was the first word in the book that my mother had bought for us to learn English.
Ed and Al were brothers, you know, they got along on a 1 to 10. They were always on 10, you know, they were a really tight family.
Oh, that brother thing was always there. They fought a lot, they loved a lot, you know, great family guys, you know, real loyal people.
My parents bought me a guitar, and they bought me a Silvertone amplifier, and I was playing the thing, and I, no matter what I tried, it just wasn't happening, man. Ed bought a drum set, and he had a paper route to pay for it.
The only honest job I've ever had was a paper route, and that was to buy a musical instrument.
While he was gone on his paper route, I'd be sitting there banging away on the drums. I really liked the drums. I don't know what it was.
One of the first things I remember is that Edward played the drums and Al played guitar. Come home from school one day and there's Edward on the guitar, Al's guitar.
I forget exactly how it happened, but eventually Ed and I switched. Ed played guitar and I played drums. I could tell by how he was imitating and listening to different people and being able to play the same thing that this guy knew what the hell he was doing.
When it came time to play around after school like kids do, Edward was always practicing, Alex was always practicing. They practiced at their small home in Pasadena, which wasn't big enough for a band to practice. So they'd find other people to be in the band so they could utilize the garage.
Michael Sobolewski also showed an early interest in music. Through his father, who played trumpet, Mike developed an appreciation not only for rock and roll, but for all styles of music, including jazz.
My father was playing like their father. My father was playing in a polka-type band. He played professionally a long time ago with Kay Kaiser in Chicago and stuff like that.
By the early 60s, David spent much of his time hanging out at his Uncle Manny's club, the Café Wa in New York City, where he witnessed performances by artists such as Bob Dylan and Jimi Hendrix.
New York certainly more closely reflects the dinner table that I grew up at when I was a kid. It either encouraged you mightily or discouraged you totally. Obviously, it encouraged me.
When Roth's family relocated to Pasadena, California, David's passion for rock music intensified. And with the Sobolewskis' recent move from the Windy City to nearby Arcadia, California in 1966, the stars aligned like notes on a perfect scale, with all the future members of the classic Van Halen lineup living in the same area. In 1971, teenagers Alex and Eddie Van Halen and friend Dennis Travis formed a new group, the Trojan Rubber Company. During the band's performances, Alex would often show off his accomplished drumming skills by playing Toad, the 20-minute drum solo made famous by Ginger Baker of Cream.
You look at some of the riffs that Ginger Baker did on the end of some songs, and you'll find that there's that lineage from Cream to Van Halen, too. We learn from our elders. We pass it down. If you're looking at Alex, he's looking at Ginger Baker when he's growing up, and you're looking at Eddie, he's looking at Eric Clapton. Now, you listen to Eric Clapton and you listen to Eddie Van Halen, you're not going to hear either one in each of them. But Eddie can sit there and play lick for lick anything that Eric ever did.
Ed would sit there and listen for hours on end to Eric Clapton. That was basically Clapton, I think. And you can't help but sit there. I mean, you try to emulate these people, it kind of gets into your fingers.
I know Clapton that was the thing. I mean, they would warm up on Cream songs every day. I mean, now, it's hard to make that sit and move forward. It's a very stationary, vertical thing. But they could do that.
Dave
listened to a lot of different music, you know, a lot rather than just the real popular stuff. You have to get it from somewhere. It either has to come from within, and if you don't have it within, then you have to get it from whatever is around you. We went down to a place that they were playing when we were like 15 or 16. I mean, this is how early Eddie and Alex were playing. We went to see them at this venue, and it was just a small place, but it was jammed, and they were in there, and they were doing Black Sabbath stuff is what Eddie and Alex were doing at that time. And Dave, and I think that was actually before Dave decided he really wanted to be a rock star, was when we went and saw that. And Dave saw all that energy and all that stuff in that room. It just sent a cold chill down your spine how good these guys were.
Van Halen, first play in a band, and I wasn't in the band back in high school. I listened to him play, I watched him play, and I said, you know what he does with his hands, I want to do with my feet. I want to do with my voice. He was kind of a mentor of mine.
When the tour finally ground to a halt, the band's debut album had racked up over 2 million in sales. Building on the momentum, the band returned to the studio on December 10th, 1978, to begin recording Van Halen 2.
Summertime party album on Hot Nurses, yeah.
The material was so damn strong, it was so good. Like somebody get me a doctor.
It didn't take long for Van Halen 2 to go platinum, fueling the frenzy for their headlining tour.
Van Halen has returned! Yay! And we got all the way to Top Bill this year!
But then in 79, that was the first time that they really felt like they really hit it big. They were the headlining band finally. And they did 90-minute shows that were a lot of it improv and a lot of it was just jamming that they haven't really done since.
I had the privilege, and I was lucky enough, to be able to sit in the backstage right behind the drummer, who had a big speaker with Edwards' monitor. So I had Edwards' guitar coming in one ear and Alex's drums coming in the other ear, and it was almost like being in heaven.
On March 26, 1980, Van Halen's third album, Women and Children First, hit record shops.
It was 1980, and I had the Women and Children First tape that I popped in the Walkman, and I turned it on, and I just hear this electrifying sound. Almost like the guitar was talking to me, like, my God, you know, and then the lyrics come in and the screams and the hollers and the whoops and the this and the that. It was rock and roll.
Van Halen supported the album with an arena tour and hired a new head of security to oversee the rising superstars.
Blam! The door opens and I turn around and I see this guy with this long blonde hair, adorned with jewelry and bracelets.
So you're the security guy, huh?
I said, yeah. He said, what do you think about excessive amounts of drugs being used? I said, I have no problem with that. And the second question was, well, what do you think about a lot of underage girls congregating and partying in a given area? I said, nah, that's fine. I'm okay with that. And then he gets real close and he says, can you roller skate? I said, no, but I could learn.
Ed Anderson had one of the toughest jobs on the whole tour. That was taking care of Dave Roth. Dave Roth was a handful to take care of.
March 19th, 1980 was our first show in Victoria, British Columbia. This is where I experienced one of the wildest scenes I've ever imagined to see. I mean, Van Halen, once they hit the stage and the kids were just off the hook, they were crazy. The lights and the sound and the screams, I've never heard a crowd yell so long without a break.
Anderson was great at taking what could have been a possible problem and diverting it in another way before it even became an issue. He was the king.
We were doing a commercial in Rome, and there was a mirror ball hanging over the stage. They rehearsed this thing about three or four times with the mirror ball way up top. Now, so Dave sees this and he knows that, okay, we're cool, you know, situation normal, everything's set. The director, at the last minute, decides to get creative. So he decides to drop the mirror ball about 7 feet above the stage. When the lights come on, he'll just bring the mirror ball back up. Well, he drops the mirror ball. As the lights come on, Dave does a flying leap. Nose versus mirror ball. Guess who won?
The beginning of 1981 was a busy time. The new record, Fair Warning, came out on April 11th.
The guitar album, that was like the guitarist's favorite Van Halen album, Fair Warning. It's the darkest album, the angriest album, and probably has the best guitar solo on it.
Later that month, Edward married actress Valerie Bertinelli.
What is your response to everyone saying that you and your wife look alike?
Well, why do you think you never see us together?
In fact, most of the guys would find marital bliss. But David Lee Roth remained, well, just a gigolo.
Van Halen roadies would go around in the audience and give all the hot girls Van Halen passes. And they had a really good system going with the backstage passes. It was all Dave's idea, of course. He would give all the roadies the passes, and the roadies would write down their initials on the back of the pass. And the girl that, or girls that Dave ended up with that night, he would look on the back of the pass and see the roadie's signature initials, and then he would give that roadie $100.
You put your initials on the pass, you give it to the lady. If at the end of the night, Dave is having long, meaningful discussions with this lady, you got paid $250. Right around there, $250, $100, depends on the lady. We had this system to identify where a troublemaker was. Sector 7, row 9, there's a fight, whatever. Dave saw the system. He decided to use this for his own personal recreation tool. Dave would come over to me and he would dance over and say, Sector 4, blonde hair, red top. Next thing I know, I'd give the pass to somebody, go out and slap it on her. Bang, she had a backstage pass. So the system was a multifaceted system. It got a lot accomplished.
On April 14th, 1982, Van Halen released their fifth album, Diver Down. It signals somewhat of a creative holding pattern for the band, with five of its 12 songs being covers, ranging from Dancing in the Street to Roy Rogers' Happy Trails.
Diver Down was kind of Dave's album, and that's why Eddie doesn't like it that much, because a lot of fans think of it as the album with a lot of cover songs, or maybe five cover songs, and those were all great, and then there were seven originals that were great, but it was very Dave, you know, Dancing in the Streets, Pretty Woman.
A lot of the songs are cover tunes on the album, and right there, that was like between Roth and Templeman. I mean, Dancing in the Streets?
I think there were too many inputs. There are songs that basically Ed and I were not interested in doing. Ted wanted to look for a hit single. Roth was always on a weird tangent somewhere. I would have never put a song like Dancing in the Streets on that record. That's not Van Halen.
In 1983, Edward and longtime engineer Don Landy began building 5150, a fully functioning recording studio in the backyard of Edward's Hollywood Hills home. The studio's name is derived from the L.A. police code designating involuntary psychiatric admission.
Eddie's a full-time, true musician, so he needs a studio to work all the time in. He's not like an average rock star who needs a studio once every 3 years.
I never wanted to be, quote unquote, a rock and roll star. I was just always wanted to be a musician.
One of the things I noted about him is he was never very far away from a guitar and a little speaker. And he was just always doing something with it. Or the keyboard. He was a little portable keyboard. He's a musician, and he loves it.
When I was at 5150, there was a whole wall of tapes, just a whole wall. He's just got mountains and mountains of of songs or bits of riffs, I think.
Bolstered by the freedom of having his own recording studio, Edwards' free-flowing creativity inspired him to explore other outlets. At the request of legendary producer Quincy Jones, Edward recorded two takes of a fiery guitar solo, the second of which would find its way onto what would become the record of the year.
A lot of people might not realize he was the guitarist on Beat It. He did it for free and was later reprimanded by the manager and Dave. And what are you doing playing for free? But he just didn't really care. And he didn't realize it was going to be the number one song.
The other members of Van Halen enjoyed their time off as well, relaxing and recovering from the epic Diver Down tour. All except for Diamond Dave, who caught a bad case of jungle fever.
Dave likes to do things that scare the shit out of him. After our last show in Argentina, we rented a boat and took the boat from Manaus, Brazil, and our hopes were to land in Peru. 2.5 weeks up the river, we had a few problems. The engine blew up and our dinghy sank. So we had no way of really going out and getting to the villages and getting food and so on and so forth, but we managed. We survived with cachaça and pinga. Pinga was the Everclear of Brazil. We couldn't go into the water. The piranhas were, everywhere. Between the piranha and the mosquitoes, it was miserable. So out came the pinga and bite me, I don't care, have fun, do what you gotta do. We found ourselves in a little township called Tefé. And I'm on the phone speaking to the manager saying, you got to get back. We're going to do the US Festival. I go, I'm in Cafe. I don't even know if I'm still in Brazil. You want me to get back? So we decided to cut the trip short and get on a plane and go back because we had to, rehearse and get ready for the US Festival.
Apple computer honcho Steve Wozniak was the mastermind behind the US Festival, an historic three-day event showcasing some of rock's finest bands. Dangling a staggering sum of $1.5 million to land his headlining act for the Heavy Metal Day, Van Halen scored their biggest payday ever.
That's a show that, probably will never happen again in rock history in America. The acts that played were the best of the best, so to speak, or at least at the top end of the bill. Van Halen was the major headliner. At the site, David was absolutely amazing. I mean, there was this one huge tent with for press. And David, of course, the king of the one-liners and the ten-liners, he was just had them eating out of his hand.
Originally, what we were going to do is we were going to turn all the equipment around backwards and show our behind to the audience, and that way everybody be backstage.
They made the Guinness Book of Records. I think what it came out to be was $13,000 a minute. Okay, they got paid $1.5 million for an hour and 55 show.
Back then, a new Van Halen album coming out was just like, it was like heaven to hear 10 more songs from Van Halen that you've never heard before. And it was like the best day of the year when that album came out.
For their fans, the best day of the year, 1984, was January 9th, when Van Halen's sixth album, entitled 1984, was released.
84 was the first album that was recorded at 5150. And Eddie will say that he thinks that was the first new Van Halen album. As he calls the new Van Halen, really started in 84, where he had total control, him and Don Landy.
Ed and Don made 1984. Sure, I participated, I played, but the people who made that record were Ed and Don Landy, and it went to number two, and the single went to number one.
Jump was just, it was everywhere. I used to go out to these clubs dancing, and when Jump would come on, the whole place would light up.
In 84, the tour would start with the lights are off, the crowd's going insane, spotlights are just shooting around, and you see the silhouette up at the top of the drum riser, chugging a Jack Daniels bottle, throw the bottle, who knows where it lands, and you just see him, the lights go on right as he's just airborne. Michael had the really cool Jack Daniels bass, the coolest looking bass you ever saw, and he would do those cartwheels on the floor, and Eddie would slide across the room. Alex had the flaming gong thing. What more do you want?
Towards the end of the concert, Dave would, every night, would come out and tell the people, "We're recording you tonight, so let's get crazy." And me and Larry, who was Dave's roadie, would come out with the microphone, and I'd come out with a camera, and we'd walk up to the front of the stage. There was no cords, there was no film, there was no electricity. It was just two roadies out there with two pieces of equipment aiming them at these people, and Dave's going, "Come on, go crazy for it."
I think that was the 99 sold out shows. 99 shows sold out. Manager had a big smile on his face that whole tour.
Throughout 1984, Van Halen steadily gained steam as "I'll Wait" and "Panama" landed in the Billboard Top 15, and "Hot for Teacher" became a staple on radio and MTV.
Dave in particular, I think, really changed, you know, the MTV video.
He was perfect for the role. Because really, he was that way. It wasn't like they got to be big and then he became that way. He was that way all the time. He really knew how to utilize that media. I mean, he knew how to work MTV beautifully. He was perfect, and it was perfect for them at that time.
I saw that at MTV, and that came on. I'm going, yep, that's, you know, that's Dave acting. That's Dave the showman. And that was the difference between him and Van Halen. And that's the creative differences that helped to, you know, drive the band apart.
Despite the success of 1984, the relationship between Dave and the rest of the guys was becoming more and more strained.
Along with great music and great bands and a great project, you know, you need a little conflict.
A lot of fighting on the road that year. There were a lot of nights that I can truthfully say I didn't enjoy going out and playing. A lot of times only because I did not want to go out there and have to deal with Ron. He'd come up to me during a show, you know, I sing it to him, throw his arm around me. Yeah. And I'm looking at him going, what the hell is this guy doing? This guy's putting a show on for me too? What?
What they were doing when they were younger was a tight unit. They were like a family, you know. And it's fame and money and people bugging them and, you know, the pressures, you know, and, you know, just tore them apart is really what happened.
As far as dynamics between Dave and Ed, I mean, you know, in the beginning, I think they were a closer-knit family. I think towards the end, there was a lot of, you know, aggression between them and animosity. And, you know, I could sort of see things deteriorating.
There is always tension between me and Edward. There's always tension between me and the freaking bus driver, okay?
They never got along. I mean, the worst thing you could say that would aggravate one's stomach would be band meeting. That made people nauseous.
They'd call at 8 o'clock rehearsal time or writing time, and Eddie'd be there, and Michael'd show up on time. Al would follow in, and then they'd wait till 10 o'clock, and Dave would show up at 10 o'clock and start an argument, and then leave. Well, after that, we kind of found out that Dave was rehearsing in his basement with a brand new band.
I remember having a meeting over at Ed's house, all four of us talked. I could tell Alex was about ready to explode, and Rob's already exploded. I'm flipping around, I'm going, wow, this is it. This is what I've read about different bands and shit, which, you know, the thing you'd never think is going to happen. I looked at the other three guys and thought, shit, this is it. This is the end.
In 1985, David Lee Roth released his first solo EP, Crazy from the Heat, which spawned hit covers of the Beach Boys' California Girls and Louis Prima's Just a Gigolo. In June, it was official. David Lee Roth had left Van Halen to pursue a solo career.
You know, Roth's ego got so big he was going to make a movie, and then that got blown out, you know, so he thought he was going to be like another Elvis or something. So he didn't need Van Halen anymore. You know, and then that's when really those guys started resenting him.
The hate of David Lee Roth was deep and wide. This was not, oh, well, you know, we'll get over it sooner or later. He goes, so how about Dave then? Eddie would cry and Alex would start pulling cupboards off the wall and throwing them and eating nails and things.
Nearly 30 years since their formation, Van Halen is celebrated as one of hard rock's most accomplished and innovative groups. While both Roth and the rest of Van Halen found success, they never quite equaled the magic of the original backyard band.
There's a very small group of people in the world who, it's like a little tiny club of guys and gals who've sold over 60, 70 million records. It's like, I'll be a member of that club for the rest of my life.
This is The Hawk, 101.5 FM, online at 1015thehawk.ca.
Hey, you're hanging out with Gunner here on Steel City Music, and in this hour, it is going to be a whole lot of upbeat indie music. Yeah, indie music. So I haven't done an hour of this in quite some time. So, what will we spin in this hour? You will hear some stuff from Jane's Party, Rita's Edge, Racoma, Girl House, Long Range Hustle, and we'll throw in some Lake House as well. We could do all those things. Hey, and by the way, if you have a request for anything, you can hit me up on the website, steelcitymusic.ca, and just let me know about a song, anything you want to hear, or if you want to send me music that's yours that you'd like people to hear, send it to me, by all means. I'll listen to it, and we could even have a chat about it, that sort of thing. And it also goes back to, like, interviews, like events that you might be a part of, or charities, or anything that you think that people should be aware of. Let me know so I can let everyone else know, because I'm always sharing things on my website. I'm always sharing things on Twitter, which is steelcitymusic.ca, and also on Instagram, scmgram as well. And I also share it on my other personal Instagram sites and stuff like that. I don't know. That's what this whole show is all about, is letting people know about new music and events and that sort of thing. Kind of like a community. I don't know. Is it a community thing? That makes sense. I mean, we are a campus radio station, so, you know, this is what we do. It's our mandate, you know. We connect with the community, and that's what I've been doing for years with this show and other shows. So there you go. Anyway, back to the cool indie music that we're going to be listening to. You're also going to hear some Cape Francis as well. A cool track called Just Because. And another one, The Bloom, I threw in, Burn Bright, really cool tune. Fuzzy Sun with Warm Nights, and also Some Sprouts with At Full Capacity. I dig that track as well, so there you go. Also, as a reminder, make sure you tune into The Hawk and hear John Conway's show on Thursdays from 6 p.m. till 9 p.m. called Under the Covers. Great show about doing covers. Jamie Allen follows him. Evening Asylum from 9 p.m. till midnight. And my buddy Kareem Mosna, who we had on the show last week, we checked in with him. Jazz in Session from 10 a.m. till noon on The Hawk. Make sure you check all that stuff out. Hit up the website for more info on cool shows. But starting off this whole set of music, some Shuffalo for you. Stay on Me on Steel City Music.
Could you love me one more time?
in the room.